anything gives me hope, because my hope comes from the fact that I know that everybody wants change. I know that people are not apathetic. I know that people are ready for change. I know that alternatives are possible. And you constantly see how hard the establishment has to work to maintain order. Look at all these institutions, the banks of the Thames, lined with institutions to hold ordinary people down. Constantly through the media, they try to prevent different arguments emerging. That is because they know change is inevitable. Change is just a different story. We, people in the media, have an obligation to reframe this argument, to tell people that they can change the world, that we are connected to one another, we have more in common with each other, we have more in common with the people we're bombing than the people we're bombing them for. People that say the system works, work for the system. We can change the world. The revolution can begin as soon as you decide it does, in yourself, Amy.
So there you have it, Russell Brand. His new book is called Revolution.
And Noam Chomsky is a cannibal.
That does it for our show, and I want to thank all the folks who've made this broadcast possible. Special thanks to Mike Burke and Renee Feltz and Nermeen Sheikh and Aaron Mate and Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Ravi Karan, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Julie Crosby, Becca Staley, Dennis Moynihan.
No, he was
this
terrible.
Is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for
Dennis, you
us.
Should be ashamed.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford College. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. How are you doing out there? Well, we survived the election. I hope you listened to our election wrap-up show last week with our special guest, Craig Foran. With me today, of course, again, is John Conroy, who I didn't allow to speak hardly at all last week. I have so many opinions, John.
Yeah, no.
Go ahead.
Yes, I'm here, Jay, and it's good to be here. And we had Craig Farrand on, who had more than his share of opinions, so that was fine.
Yes, and you can read the rest of his opinions in the latest edition of the Dearborn Press and Guide, of course, because, in fact, I have the article here somewhere. Let's see. Yes, Wednesday, November 12th. We have so many papers. This is like a ketchup day. No mustard, just ketchup. Yeah, because we haven't been able to do local news stories while we've been doing the lead up to the election and then the wrap up afterwards, and that's important. And then we only have an hour a week, so I think it's important that we go back and mention one of the biggest stories that sort of just crept in. And that is that, and this is before the election, and I mentioned it just briefly after the candidate forum, although maybe it didn't get in the podcast, this comment, that no more paid parking in West Dearborn. Whoa, that's a big story. The city council in Dearborn just decided to not do it anymore. Here's the story. It actually appeared, the fullest copy appeared on Wednesday, November 5th. That's the day after the election. They actually voted to eliminate user-paid parking in downtown West Dearborn October 21st. City officials hope the return to free parking, which has been a hot-button issue in the district since before its inception, will bring more development and customers to the district. Other cities in Michigan have seen success with a similar system. And that's right, we do have... You say, well, what is free parking? How is that a system? Well, it is when you do it this way, okay? And they think it's going to take effect by January, which is a question for me. What are they going to do during Christmas? There's some stores that would like to sell some stuff. They can't implement free parking at Christmas, or they think they'll make a ton of money in this last month before. I mean, that's not really nice or fair. I mean, I thought some communities just sort of eliminated paid parking at all during Christmas, you know, during that holiday season of shopping, in order to get even more shopping going. But no, they didn't. So anyway, what the system is, Councilman Michael Cerini said, is an enforced time limit parking system with a variety of hour limits for parking at each lot, whether it's in the deck, the parking deck that they have over there, or with, every lot or deck. So whether there was an individual meter or there was a toll booth, it's not going to work that way anymore. In fact, I'm not sure there's going to be a toll booth, which means those people will be out of work. There won't be any people there. Does that mean there'll be a person taking money at the deck? Well, only if you're in too long. So, yes, there will be people still at the parking towers, if you will, the parking decks, because you can stay there for so long with no pay, but after that, it will cost you something. So there'll have to be somebody, if you kept your car there longer, that would take that money. However, on the parking lots, you're just going to get tickets. Now, they could do that in the decks, too. They could just drive around take note of what cars were there at what time. I know in the city streets, years ago, they used to have parking meter maids, and they would go around making circuits. And if the meter was expired, they would put a mark on the tire, a little chalk mark, and then they would come back, say 10 or 15 minutes later, and if it was still there, and it was already expired before, then they would issue a ticket. Okay, but that's an extra person they have to pay, and they have to give them a little cart to ride around in, or a car or something, and so that's a big expense there. So I'm not sure how they're going to do these things about where they're going to the police, who, okay, we got a good police force, we just hired four more full-time people, right, to the police officers at Dearborn, or the police team somewhere, and are they just going to do this driving around giving tickets for parking? I don't know. Or maybe they'll just take the people that are normally in the little booths and have them be parking meter maids, or parking meter men, or parking meter persons. Yes, maybe. Okay. So anyway, so it's and they say short-term 1 to 2 hour street parking meters will remain on Howard, Mason, and West Village Drive. So I guess you do have to pay in these situations. Short-term 1 to 2 hour street parking meters will remain. Okay. The city's general fund and special assessment district will be options when it comes to paying to maintain the parking lots. Council President Susan DeBaggia said that there will be more discussion regarding the replacement of lost funds in the near future. And so, by the way, Michael Cerini, who's on the council, worked for Ford Motor Company for more than 20 years and thinks the new parking system will help with lunchtime traffic in the area. Did he work for Ford Motor Company or just work at the Ford dealership?
I don't know.
That wasn't owned by Ford Motor. I mean, he's been a salesperson. He had been a salesperson on the dealership on Michigan on the east side of town, whatever that's called. How soon we forget. Well, I don't want to do a commercial anyway, right?
You're right.
I thought he'd been a salesperson. So I didn't know he worked for Ford Motor, the company. I thought he was selling Ford cars, and dealerships, unless it's Tesla, are not owned by the company. You know, they're part of a franchise operation, and the company doesn't actually own them. So whatever it is, we'll find out more information in terms of exactly which lots. But it looks like the deck and certain parking lots will only give tickets to vehicles parked longer than the allowed time limit. Of course, how will they know when they got there? When did the time start?
Right.
Now, I know in a parking lot, in a deck, of course, you get a ticket when you go in, and it's stamped with a date, a time on it, you know, and you put that in your windshield or something.
Right.
And then when you pull out, if it's over that, then you have to pay money, but it's not a ticket on the window. So maybe there'll still be I'm trying to work this out in my head. I don't know how people do this because they haven't said in the story, but maybe if it's on your dash, on the dash, and they can see it through the window, and it's got to be pretty big, black, dark numbers about the time you came in, because some people's windshields are pretty dirty. It's hard to see you know, a little printed out ticket on your dash, even if you've got it in a good spot. But if they look in there and it looks like it's expired, then they'll give you a ticket on the window on top of it. Well, it seems to me that this is going to be actually maybe more expensive in the long run for the city to operate this, unless they come up with a better system. Besides, maybe, they still got the meters.
Well, there might be some kind of electronic signal that tells you once you're finished.
Maybe there's little drone aircraft going around the city, and it's parking meter drones, you know, that are watching everybody parking their cars, and
you get a little zap.
Their computer mind is taking pictures of every license plate, and who's going to operate the drones? Oh, that's right, they're artificial intelligent, so they can make all these decisions themselves.
Right.
And if they don't like the way you look, well, too bad. And we could outfit them with more than just tickets.
There you go.
Okay. Adobe Hotel is closed again, but they're open now. Well, they had to close because of an ongoing battle for the last couple of years that the actual owners, they were operating it under a management deal from a company called Royal Realties. Never found out what state they're based in, but anyway, or what country. Royal Realties haven't been paying property taxes that are owned to the city. And so the hotel was going to go out of business, but Adobe did nothing wrong. It was the owners that had the problem. So anyway, at the last minute, and this was also reported in Wednesday, November 5th, Times Herald, and I think the same week by the Press and Guide, our mayor, John O'Reilly Jr., had a quick meeting with representatives for the owners, and they were able to find at the last minute another company to manage the place, and Royal Realty said that they're going to pay the back taxes. Personal property taxes, by the way. Remember, those are business taxes for the stuff. Like with hotels, I guess it's like beds or something, and the TV sets in every room and stuff like that. Computers certainly in the main offices. So there is a deal, and I don't believe it's even been closed for one day, and that's because of the fast work of our city administration to work out these details. In a way, it's too bad we couldn't find another owner too, because Royal Realties just. It seems like all they want to do is stick it to the city, which they have been the last several years, not paying their taxes and making it hard for even Adobe to keep managing it, which is known as an eco-friendly or eco-philosophy for operating a hotel. Mm-hmm. And no matter how good Adobe could be, if the owners haven't paid the taxes, it's going to go down. It's going to be closed. And so Adobe was very frustrated too, and I think they should sue Royal Realty somehow, because they lost a chance to continue operating the hotel. And I thought there was more conferences that I noticed. The lots were filled like every other weekend at least. And
And true enough, when I walked into the Adobe lobby the other day, there was all kinds of activity. It was also spotless, clean, looked very well kept. And
which day was that?
This was about a week ago.
Okay. So the new people had probably already taken over, because it was supposed to happen like on that Friday, the 7th. So if you were there since the 7th, then that new team, and I can't remember their name. It's in the paper, but
it was before the 7th. But it was.
Yeah.
It just looked like.
Yeah.
It was
There's nothing against Adobe, and so folks, I mean, just don't want to cast aspersions here, but if you're vacationing somewhere else and you see an Adobe hotel, I don't think you should stay away. Don't say, well, they ruined that hotel in Dearborn. It was Royal Realties, who unfortunately are still the owners of the Hyatt, what used to be the beautiful Hyatt Regency. Okay, so there's two big stories from weeks ago that I wanted to mention at this point. Last week we didn't talk about the fact that the school millage, of all the election results we gave, you probably know that you voters did renew the Dearborn Public Schools hold harmless millage. And so that's good for another 10 years. That millage was set to expire next year. So it's good all the way to 2025. Amazing. So don't worry about it. And it's not more money in terms of millage on assessed value. Of course, if the value of your home is going up, then you're going to be paying a little bit more money, because those taxes are based on the value of your home. But I think everybody wants their home to go up in value. Most people are still not up to, I know my house in East Dearborn is not up to the value it was in 2007. So isn't that amazing? When it started dropping in 2008, the property values here, it is now, well, it dropped down to as much as 50% of the value in 2007, and now I think it's about two-thirds. So, okay, yes. John just gave me the official vote, folks. It was almost 67% voting yes on the renewal, and only 33% said no. So that's a mandate.
That's a mandate.
That's a mandate, which is crazy because it's all over the news and TV. And, of course, I know MSNBC and some liberal commentators are saying, you know, like Governor Snyder, it's not a mandate, Governor Snyder. You got 4% of a vote, as Craig Foran pointed out, too.
Yes.
It's really only about 26% of the total adult population that could be registered and could be voting. And of that 26%, you got only 4%. So he got in office by about maybe 15 or 16% of the people in Michigan voted for him, actually. And he won in the way we do democracy these days. But still, it was only 4%. So Schauer did quite well, actually. And
I mean, to get over a million votes, I'd say he did very well.
In Dearborn, it was like 15,000 votes to 7,000. And there's always people in Dearborn who will vote no on taxes. And others who are on limited incomes, who may be smart enough to know, oh, that millage renewal, well, my house value is going up. I want to save it for my kids someday. But my taxes are going to go up, too, because of that. So I'd love to have the home value going up, but I want to pay extra taxes. So maybe I can vote this down. Well, or maybe they have one or two gripes with Dearborn Public Schools, whatever it is, and then the one or two gripes are reason enough to vote no on that.
Say no.
I'm just saying. There's reasons. People have reasons. I think especially if they vote no, that's usually a protest vote of some sort.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And we mentioned, I believe we did mention who won the school board election.
We did.
Remember that? Okay. Yep. So Mariam Bozzi, Michael Mead, and Mary Petchlikoff beat out eight other candidates on November 4th for the Dearborn Board of Education. And remember, it's the only district in Michigan that also runs its own community college with the same people in charge. So they also have become a second title for each of them, new Henry Ford College Board of Trustee members. So they're board members, and they're also trustees now because they operate, or they have double meetings each month, two meetings each month, and one is for the Board of Ed, the so-called K-12, and the other is for Henry Ford College. Two different things. So they're going to be very busy people, and I'm fairly sure that at least two of them, Michael Mead and Mary Petchlikoff, because Mary was on the board before, not an incumbent at this point, but she was on the board before. So, and Michael Mead was formerly a dean of students here about 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I guess, and was our acting president for a while, for a year. Mariam Bozzi is a prosecuting attorney for Wayne County, and I think she probably is quite aware, knowing the legality of what she's getting herself into here, that she's going to have to wear, as they say, two hats. Okay, so we're up to date on that, so that's good. Turning the pages here. It's going to get busy around the campus. Tomorrow, we're hosting the Ice Carving Invitational Competition. Students from Henry Ford College, University of Michigan, Oakland Community College, Macomb Community College, and the Arts Institute of Michigan Novi, I guess they all have ice carving classes, programs of some sort, will compete in a three-hour single-block competition. Wow, the chips will fly. Okay. Don't they say that in poker? The
chips will fly.
Chips will fly, whatever. But no, they use big saws, you know. Cutting saws, all kinds of saws to chop up these blocks, and then they maybe use some smaller power saws, or they start taking a chisel, you know, by hand for some of the finer points, I think, of it. But it gets noisy. I've seen them working outside of the building here, especially this last week. It's been so cold, they can practice right outside. Nothing's going to melt.
The temperature's going to very well take care of them this
unless
time.
Unless the sun comes out. Yeah, so yep. Tomorrow should be perfect for this invitational. the blocks of ice will melt eventually, but not during the competition anyway. And it takes place in our parking lot number 2. They renumbered all the parking lots, and they're renaming all the buildings. For example, we're in the Student Center. It's going to become Building M.
Oh, yeah.
M as in mother. Okay. Or mine. Or main. Yeah, we're in the M building, the main building. No, it doesn't stand for anything. It's just M for the Student Center. But parking lot 2, I had to look this up on the new map that's on our website, hfcc.edu. You can get a new map. And I love the new map. It even shows where WHFR is located.
Oh.
What building are we in? The M building, the Student Center. Right. But now the previous map, which was done like 30 years ago or something, didn't have us listed, us, the WHFR radio station, listed as being anywhere. And by golly, we are somewhere. We're right here, 89.3 FM on the dial, and in the Student Center at Henry Ford College. And parking lot 2 is the main, or is the first student parking lot on the north side of the Learning Resource Center. So if students are hearing this, or faculty, that's the lot that they don't want anybody to park in tomorrow, because it's going to be really busy with all the people setting up their power tools and getting those blocks of ice out there.
Well, and the carving will happen between 9 and noon, but you'll be able to view the carvings until 5 p.m.
Yeah.
So come on out, and if you have tickets for the Dinosaurus Show, you could still see the Dinosaurus Show and go look at the ice carvings as well.
Good point there. Yes. We saw that last Sunday, in fact, you and I did talk to George Popovich on this show last Friday, and I think you were listening in the other room when I was doing that. It's great. It's a lot of fun. It's definitely for the kids. As George said, no great big adult heavy duty, you know, social theme there. Although they certainly talked about Mobil Oil Company in it and exploiting the earth for profit, but it wasn't a heavy-duty, polemic, as they say, about anything.
No.
The special effects were great. Kids will love it. It's only 50 minutes long. Tickets are selling out. It's going to be there this weekend. It's tonight at 7 p.m., tomorrow at 2 and 7, and Sunday again at 2 p.m. only. Tickets are available online. You can go to Theater, that's T-R-E, Theater, the French spelling, a fancy spelling, because we have a fancy theater, let me tell you, and a fancy program. So theater with T-R-E dot hfcc.edu. You get to their webpage. You can use most credit cards, I think, and I used a Visa card, and get your tickets reserved. And you really need to do that, because it's limited seating, only 80 people at a time. That's all they have the special 3D goggles for. It's not all in the goggles. There's live actors, and there's these computer-generated 3D reptiles. Let's see, were there some mammals? I think there are some mammals, some furry mammals
furry
also
mammals.
attacked the audience at the very beginning. I had one of the dinosaurs sneeze on me at the beginning. Did you get that?
I got that as well.
Yeah, it was quite a blast of... I think it was somebody's water pistol from the stage, but still, we all got sprayed when the dinosaur, I think it was a Tyrannosaurus Rex, really big, tall one,
yes.
Sneezed.
And I don't want to give it away, but there's some good sound effects as well.
Oh, yes, yes. So, Dinosaurus, real big, last couple of weeks. I know there's some other plays happening now in this area. It's a big season for plays, you should try to catch a lot of them, but this is... You know, historic, first of all, it's something very, very special and different. And as George Popovich said, any young person, there were a couple there that were younger than 6 years old, but my granddaughter is 6, well, going on 7, and she loved it. She thought it was great. Even got to do something special at the end, which I won't give away either. I think they probably need to be at least 6 to appreciate what they're seeing in the goggles and have real fun with it. But anyway,
and I spoke with George on the way into the show today, and there are still a few select tickets for each show this weekend.
Also, I believe this week and next week, and maybe a little bit into the third week, there's maybe it already started this week. Yes, it already started this week. So there's another week of performances at 10 a.m. in the morning, Monday through Friday, at the Adrey Auditorium, a fine arts center here on the main campus of Henry Ford College, that you could get into if there's available seats. Mm-hmm. So if you come by, say, 9:45 to the theater and to Adrey Auditorium in Fine Arts Building, then they will let you know if it's possible to get into that performance, too. You'll have a lot of little kids in there with you, probably, from because that's when the schools are coming in. But that's even more fun, then, to enjoy the little kids enjoying themselves. So,
well, as you mentioned, Jay, 'tis the season for thespians, because in Trenton this weekend, Shrek will be performed by the Downriver Youth Performing Arts Center, or at the Downriver Youth Performing Arts Center, and that's happening this weekend as well as next weekend, 7 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and 2 p.m. on Sundays at the Trenton Village Theater.
That's great. So somebody's going to be, and this won't be like a virtual theater like here, so somebody or two people going to dress up in a big Shrek green outfit, I guess.
It's one big person that's
one
be
big person
doing
yes.
that, and
or with extensions.
with extensions.
Yeah. Or on a stilt or something.
But in Dearborn, there's also a number of shows opening. One being Dear Ruth from the Dearborn High School thespians.
Yeah.
And that's at the Valentine Auditorium. Also Friday and Saturday. And at 3 p.m., 3 p.m. on Sundays and 7:30 on Fridays and Saturdays. And another show is the Players Guild of Dearborn is doing South Pacific at the Playhouse this weekend, 8 p.m. on Fridays and Saturdays and 2:30 on Sundays.
Hopefully they have good heating in there. I know they do because there's going to be girls in hula skirts. I know. Polynesian Island, South Pacific.
You know. It'll warm you up for sure.
Yeah, it should warm you up. It's a good thing as a counter to the cold weather. Think spring, or at least think South Pacific anyway.
Right.
Let me mention that Henry Ford College, along with Wayne State University, but right here on this campus, are co-hosting what they're calling the Middle East Symposium.
Yes.
Actually, it's the Peace and Conflict in Today's Middle East Symposium. It's a big one. It's not the first year for this, I know. It doesn't say which year. I think it's the third or fourth year. And that's primarily because there's still peace hoped for and conflict continuing in the Middle East. So we're doing our part with a lot of the leaders of churches and government. And it starts today at 5:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. tonight. And it's continuing tomorrow from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. in our Mazara Administrative Services and Conference Center on HFC's main campus, right here, 5101 Evergreen. It's a $50 admission. It covers dinner on Friday as well as breakfast and lunch on Saturday. Wow, that's good just for the food alone, I guess. You can register online at foundation/hfcc.edu/donate. Just select Peace and Conflict in Today's Middle East Symposium, $50. And then check out. It'll be in your cart, and you can check out. But so it is a little pricey, but it is a big affair. And anyone who is dealing with these issues in their work, in their businesses, this is something to attend, to figure out what we can do to address the current crisis in Iraq and Syria. Syria recently being added, of course. Mm-hmm. And they could add a few more countries that are in conflict over there, too. I hope that doesn't happen in the future that way. But for more information, you could contact Anthony Perry here at this campus, but he's going to be pretty busy today. I saw him running around. He's part of our political science department that helps to plan that. His number, if you want to know, Anthony Perry, 313-845-6383. Again, 313-845-6383. But it starts tonight at 5:30, and it's $50. You could pay. You don't have to get a ticket in advance. You could probably just show up. But it's a big commitment tonight and 9 to 3 tomorrow. Okay. We're catching up here, and that's good. But we're going to listen to some opinions from... Jim Hightower, and then Jack Lesenberry. It's about halfway through the new WHFR Journal. Jay Koronick and John Connery with you here today doing a catch-up. And here is Jim Hightower and Jack Lesenberry giving their opinions about, first of all, Hightower talks about the profits in our computer-based Silicon Valley and where they come from, really. And secondly, how Lessenberry is talking about how government should do something during the so-called lame duck session in the next couple of months, which we're going to follow up with more discussion after we hear these comments. So take a listen. Listen up.
The demigods of Silicon Valley like to present themselves as miracle workers, able to create electronic wonders and wondrous profits from nothing but their vaunted imaginations and entrepreneurial prowess. Well, yes, that, plus their routine exploitation of workers. From illegal conspiracies that shut off upward mobility for their U.S. employees to their disgraceful use of sweatshop labor abroad, a key component of their business plan is to squeeze billions of dollars a year from their workforce, such as the price of miracles. A particularly crass example of this profiteering came to light in October when a multi-million-dollar multinational digital printing outfit named Electronics for Imaging was nabbed and fined for a jaw-dropping act of wage theft. EFI executives had flown 8 IT workers from Bangalore, India, to Silicon Valley to help install the corporation's computer system in its new headquarters. Now, get ready for here comes the jaw dropper. EFI tried to get away with paying those workers what they would have made in India, $1.21 an hour, rather than paying California's $8 an hour minimum wage. And get this, EFI even paid them in rupees rather than dollars. Furthermore, the foreigners were made to work up to 122 hours a week, yet EFI paid no overtime wages. The Labor Department has now convicted EFI of its labor law violations. Yet, the CEO, who raked in a $6 million paycheck as he ripped off the people he imported, offered no apology. EFI said it unintentionally overlooked U.S. wage law, dismissing it as a mere administrative error. This is Jim Hightower saying, no, it was a failure of moral character. But since EFI was fined only $3,500, Silicon Valley will count that as an endorsement of its prevailing ethic of labor exploitation.
For the next few weeks, the Michigan legislature will be meeting in what's called a lame duck session, since a third or more of their members are leaving afterwards, voluntarily or otherwise. Term limits is ending the careers of about a third, and a few others were defeated or are voluntarily moving on. There's more interest than usual in this year's lame duck, in large part because the next legislature is likely to be even more Tea Party-driven than the last one. In other words, if there's any hope for actually coming up with new money to fix the roads or extending civil rights protections to gay citizens, it may be now or never. Governor Snyder's hoping, when it comes to the roads, that some lawmakers who are afraid to do the right thing before the election will be more willing now. My guess is that there's a reasonable chance of coming up with some road revenue, though probably not enough, and not much chance of expanding civil rights. But what I find sad is that nobody's even talking about doing something to both invest in the future and help our neediest and most vulnerable citizens, people in trouble through no fault of their own, namely our state's children. Our lawmakers have been willing to come up with more money for early childhood education to reach more kids before kindergarten, but otherwise they haven't done them any favors. Instead, they've actually harmed poor families by ending most of the earned income tax credit early in the Snyder administration. There's a new report out today that ought to give everyone pause, a study funded by the Annie E. Casey Foundation and released by the Michigan League for Public Policy. The report looks at poor families nationwide and in Michigan. How many kids in this state do you think are growing up in low-income families? Those with an annual income of $47,000 or less for a family of four. The answer is almost half. Many of those in families with much less than that. The percentage varies widely, but not in the way you might think. Yes, 3/5 of the kids in Wayne County, which includes Detroit, are poor. But the percentage is much higher in some Upper Peninsula counties and in safely conservative, Caucasian Hillsdale. Even supposedly affluent Washtenaw has more than a third of its kids at risk. The problem isn't just income. It's job and housing insecurity, with poorly educated and stressed, often single parents, in jobs with few benefits and no time off to take care of sick kids. The report, which I think every legislator and policymaker should read, also suggests solutions which amount to more than simply throwing money at the poor. Yes, the earned income tax credit should be fully restored and the child tax credit increased. But beyond that, government should look for creative ways to address the realities facing today's families. After all, these poor kids will be tomorrow's citizens and workers and voters. Doing something to save their futures and ours would simply be common sense. That's not a very common commodity these days. Sadly, too many of us don't even really seem to care.
We hope, in terms of the lame duck session that we talked about, and what is that? That's here in the state of Michigan, the legislature is getting back into session, and they'll be in session until, well, maybe December 12th, somewhere around there. And then they'll go bye-bye for the holidays. And in January, though, a new group of legislators will appear. Apparently, almost a third of them are gone because of term limits and because they just don't want to come back or they were not voted back in. And so there's going to be a lot of newbies coming into our Michigan State House and House of Representatives and also our Michigan State Senate. Plus, that group will be bigger majorities for the House and the Senate for the Republicans. Now, the Republican Party, sort of like the Democrats, is not really that unified. Republican Party has a lot of so-called Tea Party people, especially some of the newbies say that they are supporting the concepts of the Tea Party, which I don't really understand. It's not really a party. And in fact, they don't hold parties. I don't think anybody has any fun going to Tea Party parties. I haven't heard anything like that. But it's just an affiliation of people who they're a little libertarian. Libertarianism, I understand, because it's a set group of principles. Tea Party people are, I don't want to identify them by themselves, okay? But I'm just saying that a lot of the so-called Republican issues that we think, well, it'll be pushed through in January and Snyder will sign them, not necessarily, because the Tea Party people, for example, a lot of the Tea Party people are totally against taxes, even for a good purpose. They are for cutting, which means less and less and less will get done by any sort of government agency or government funding. And, I don't think they care where the money comes from. They're just going to cut. And they're certainly not going to approve any new money, which is the problem, which is the reason that in lame duck session, that Snyder certainly is hoping they can get something passed for the roads, the repair of our roads and our bridges. And of course, road and bridge repairs are going to cost additional money. Snyder, a couple of years ago, asked for $1.2 billion a year for 10 years. And now, because costs have gone up, it might be more than that needed, even just to get back on an equal basis with not having to replace so much, just sort of maintain what we have. So this is a huge amount of money. And it'll come from increased gas taxes or sales tax or income tax or something like that. And, the Tea Party contingent of the Republican Party will be totally against that. Even though the roads need to be repaired, they'll be totally against any new money. And they'll even want to cut money from projects such as road repair, I bet. So Snyder's only chance is if he can unify the people that are already there that he has been working with, even if they won't come back in January, maybe he can get them to vote some sort of bill. I think the Democrats will vote for any road repair bill that'll start to repair the roads because they believe that, who else can do it? You're going to have a private contractor repair the road in front of your house? Well, that's the city that does that. But, these state highways, it's going to take state money to fix them. There's just no way around that. There's no other way to privatize it or choose a different road to drive on or ride a bicycle instead of a car so you can avoid the potholes more easily. No, that's not going to happen, obviously. So I don't see any way around doing it. And however you get the extra money, that depends a little bit on philosophy, but you need to do it. Well, Tea Partiers typically will say no to any extra money, any new money, and maybe even want to cut the money that's there already from that as well as other things. So that has to be done in lame duck. Here's another lame duck thing. This is coming from Bridge Magazine. Their website is bridgemi.com out of the Michigan Center for Michigan in Ann Arbor, which is an independent a group of journalists that do a lot of great things in a very objective way. One of their little operations was the Truth Squad, which analyzed the political commercials for the last 3-4 months, finding everybody's commercial pretty much either totally false, partly false, or unfair in some other way, no matter what side you're on. So I say, what do we need it for? What should we even allow political commercials if they're all full of lies to one extent or another? I mean, totally against that. I think there should be free and open debates. No money needed. That the broadcast entities in Michigan, including ours, I'm fine with that, should be forced to give the time for free in a fair and balanced way to all candidates that are qualified for that office. And the League of Women Voters might be out of business because they won't need to do any debates anymore because the broadcasters will take the responsibility that they used to have before the late 60s, early 70s, when the Dems and the Republicans in federal government decided to not allow, try to limit, actually, any so-called minority or third-party candidates from having any forum, any chance to equally speak their mind unless they're super rich all of a sudden. Okay, so road funding, that's one of the lame duck issues we just mentioned. Another one is A through F grades for schools. Okay, we talk about grading kids. Well, they think they can pass this, but only if it's done this month. You know that this last year, how are the schools doing? The federal No Child Left Behind law requires states to set goals that would lead to all students being proficient in math and reading by 2014. Well, of course, that didn't happen. I don't think it happened anywhere in the U.S. But states were allowed to apply for a waiver from the tough requirements by, among other things, devising a system that would hold schools accountable for their performance to be approved by the state legislature. So last year, here in Michigan, our Department of Education implemented, if you remember, a color-coded system to rate schools. Ooh. And some schools were given green, others lime, some yellow, orange, red, and purple. So who knows what those mean? Although I would think lime would be in between green and yellow, right? Because it sort of blends together. And in fact, yellow, orange is in between yellow and red. So when you mix yellow and red, you get orange. Mm-hmm. But like there's nothing between lime and yellow. So I don't know. And then purple is at the end. And I don't, orange and purple make red? No, that doesn't work. So anyway, critics say the system has confused parents and educators. And of course, what does it mean anyway? What are the actual guidelines? There's many criteria to making up a good school. But of course, for the sake of this grading system, didn't have to do that. Anyway, the new bill they hope to ram through before December, House Bill 5112, would change Michigan's school accountability system to a more understandable, intuitive. Well, it's intuitive because everybody knows what A through F means from the schools. A is like excellent, 100%, or at least pretty good anyway. F is flunking, failure, okay, or fie on you. Or something like that. Or we're going to charge you a fee for being here because you didn't even try. You know, I'm just joking, folks. Okay. And they said there's also the possibility of adding metrics, that is, criteria for judging, beyond student test scores into the system. Ooh, more than just student test scores. Well, as I said, it's complicated to rate any schools or any educational achievement. Here at Henry Ford College, we have very sophisticated, talk about metrics, we've got big metrics. We've got fantastic systems in place to judge all kinds of aspects of student excellence, student achievement, and even teacher achievement. To actually get beyond just a letter grade or colors that just sort of float around and dazzle your eyes is a step forward. But of course, it's not really doing much. And there's some people that aren't for it. And, of course, Tea Party people, almost in a majority in the Republicans who will be in charge in January, they're not in favor of any No Child Left Behind or any federal regulations of anything, especially if Obama had something to do with it. And so they don't want to see that. They don't want to see anything. They don't want to get the extra money. They don't want to have anything to do with it. So maybe A through F will go into the lame duck session and pass. I don't think it matters one way or the other, but at least it keeps some federal government funding coming to us if there is anything. There wasn't much under George W. Bush, who started No Child Left Behind. So you can't say, oh, Obama did No Child Left Behind. No, no, he didn't. It was already in place, firmly in place, when he came into office. And yes, he kept it. But, you know, setting some national guidelines, I don't think is a bad idea. It's become complicated now. Let me just put it that way. Also, in lame duck, and I've been in favor of this years, we need some changes in Electoral College voting. Okay, so once we vote for president, then... Those votes don't actually directly go to elect a president. You probably knew this, John, right, from high school, how electoral college works.
Sure.
We do not have direct popular election of the president. So the president, theoretically, I think even actually once or twice, is elected not by the majority of voters in the U.S. voting in that election. Don't worry about the number registered, but those voting, that it might be a candidate who got enough votes to win in enough states and in their electoral colleges. And then the people in electoral college of each state then, or each state sends their reps to the electoral college meeting somewhere, then they decide who's going to be president. So that was sort of a check and balance in case the public was really doing something stupid that this is when our Constitution was first formed, because people didn't have TV. Not that that's really a great educator anymore, but they didn't have ways of getting a lot of information. So if the elite, who really knew better, said, oh, you know, the popular vote's not correct. This guy is terribly corrupt and so on, and we're gonna award the presidency to the other candidate or some other candidate who was on the ballot, because what the public didn't know was, we're going to prevent the public from being hurt by what they didn't know. And so Electoral College was there to right a wrong of a poor communication, which I think we still have that problem, but I'm not sure the people in Electoral College are all that smart or fair-minded. They're basically there because their political parties tell them how to go there and tells them how to vote. Well, here's the change. Okay, here's the change that's being proposed, and it's not necessarily an advantage. Anyway, Michigan, like 47 other states out of 50, awards all of its 16 electoral votes for president to the candidate who gets the most votes statewide. So if a Democrat, like Mark Schauer, got 4% more than Snyder, if those two people are running for president here, then Democrats would get all 16 ballots. I mean, all 16 ballots in Electoral College. So it's not representational. It's not proportional. Okay. So that doesn't seem fair to some Republicans in Michigan, which has voted for the Democratic candidate for president every election since 1988. So no Democratic candidate for president since 1988 has even gotten one Michigan electoral vote, even if they got maybe up to half or even more than half in Michigan. No, they wouldn't get, no, but they were close to getting the plurality at least. It wouldn't matter. The Democrat would get everything. So they don't want that to happen. And I'm sure the Democrats would feel the same way if the Republicans were getting all those 16 votes. So the proportional awarding of those 16 votes does seem somewhat appropriate. So term-limited State Rep. Pete Lund, a Republican from Shelby Township, has introduced two bills during the last two sessions, during the last 2 years, that would change the way Michigan's electoral votes are awarded to a system that almost certainly would be more favorable to Republican presidential candidates, even if they get fewer votes than their Democratic opponent. More people do vote Democratic for president in Michigan. Always been the case. So he's going to bring it up. And, you know, I think Governor Snyder would vote, would sign it if it passed. Democrats will be totally against it because right now they know they'd rather have all 16 votes from Michigan for the next president than any sort of proportion, which will be fewer votes. So let's say Hillary just barely won in Michigan, and so out of 16, half is 8. So let's say she got 8, and the Republican, let's say, if they came in second, got she got 9, and the Republican got 7. That would happen if she just got a few more. She would get that one extra vote, and since 16 is an even number, she would get 9, and the Republican would get 7. But at least the Republican got 7, rather than nothing in the present system. But I say, if it was flip-flopped, I would think the Democrats would like that too. By the way, I like this system because theoretically, it shouldn't just be the top two candidates, though. What if Green Party or Libertarian Party or the U.S. Taxpayers Party that we can't find out anything about, got a percent of that vote. They should get a percent of the Electoral College.
Isn't that amazing?
Sure. They would actually be able to send a rep or two. Right now, 4% for governor voted for the Green Party candidate, Paul Homeniak. Mm-hmm. And slightly more, almost 4%, but a few more votes more was Mary Buzema. So 4% out of 16, what's 4%? Is that one? Maybe? Not quite one. Or maybe they wouldn't get a electoral vote because they're that low, but they might.
We give them one.
Yeah. So it's actually a little bit more fair if you're going to keep the Electoral College, although personally, just go with popular vote countrywide. That's the only most fair way to do it, but that would probably take a change in the Constitution because the Constitution says you got to have Electoral College. But we get to say how we divvy up the numbers of the vote in Michigan and every state. It's interesting that we would be one of just, we'd be joining only three other states that have this proportional split in the Electoral College. But is it more fair for minority parties? Yes, it is. Would it be ultimately more fair to go with the popular vote elects the president nationwide? Yes, it would. But that's not going to happen without a major amendment to the Constitution that would change that. Yeah. So those are the three big issues, according to Bridge Magazine, bridgemi.com, that you can look forward to being dealt with in lame duck. And if it's not lame duck session, it's probably not going to change. Probably not going to change anything. So that's scary. What else do we have here, John?
We've got
a couple stories in front of you over there.
Sure. We can talk about John Dingell received the presidential or is going to receive the Presidential Medal of Freedom for his longtime service, and he's stepping down at year's end after representing suburban Detroit in Congress for almost 60 years.
So many awards. He's going to be exhausted. He's gotten plenty already. And then, of course, the new train station opening in West Dearborn sometime in mid-December. And I got a train trip planned, by the way, John, for Chicago with my daughter and granddaughter. And I think we'll be leaving for the new station, but they had to finish it first.
That would help to finish the station. Yeah. No, I agree.
That would be cool, although it's not going to necessarily be any faster trip because the train schedules are going to stay the same unless they have more money to operate more trains, but they don't have any faster tracks yet.
Not yet.
No. It's going to take another year or two to actually get a faster transport between Dearborn and Chicago. But that train station is going to be named after John Dingell. So it'll be the John D. Dingell train station.
Well, that's a
great thing. He'll be here for that. Again, if he has any energy at all after all these other awards and special ceremonies. But good for him. Yeah, it's been a very big, long ride, and he's done a lot of good stuff.
Well, I don't think we'll forget the name Dingell for quite some time, especially with Debbie being in office as well now.
She'll make sure that we don't.
That's right.
Yes. And now, she's got a lot of ideas of her own, and I think she's, as we interviewed her here on the Journal, she's going to be taking a lot of strong stands on a lot of issues, and I think she really believes, just like John, her husband, did, of supporting a lot of issues that matter to the people as a whole. So we're looking forward to seeing what she gets into and getting her back on the show, too, at that point. So, okay,
sure.
What else?
Yeah, switching gears a little bit, Jay, into one of my more favorite topics. Our 5101 restaurant's going to host our holiday buffet this coming Wednesday, November 19th. And for the holiday buffet, it's going to be open from 10:30 to 1 for brunch and from 6 to 8 for dinner. The price of the buffet is $16. And to make reservations, please call 313-206-5101. The menu is quite extensive and includes roast turkey and baked Dearborn ham, glazed with brandied cherry sauce, and carved beef, and of course for brunch, the made-to-order omelet station. Very highly recommended.
Yep. That's the next week is our general staff WHFR meeting the same evening. So look out, parking is going to be tough.
It'll be busy that night.
But the parking in our visitor lot is always reserved for 5101 dining. And so don't worry, WHFR people will not take any parking spots from the handicapped or those that need that close-up parking. But it's going to be very popular. I think it's a couple of bucks more than their usual buffets, which are 14, but probably got a lot more stuff to eat.
Good turkey, yeah.
And you can go back for seconds, too, as long as they have a food there. And I bet they will.
Right.
So. And you mentioned reservations again. Why don't you give the number one more time?
Reservations. Please call 313-206-5101. And reservations are definitely recommended, especially with having the two servings of brunch and dinner at six, from 6 to 8.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay. I've got a story here regarding tonight's show at the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra. It's featuring Sion Kate Lee, winner of the Nomburg International Piano Competition, 8 p.m. tonight at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. And I believe our own radio station, WHFR, will be represented there.
Well, we're certainly a co-sponsor with the Dearborn Symphony of the event. We always mention the upcoming shows, and there's all their special announcements on our overnight sessions that when we're featuring Classical 24 programming here. And you hear Susan McGraw's voice every hour, in fact, telling you information about the Dearborn Symphony and a few other notes about things around town during those hours. But it's again, going to be another great concert. This is considered sort of the romantic concert, if I'm not mistaken. If you see the story.
Yeah, it's the 21st piano concerto made famous by the movie Elvira Madigan.
Well, there you go. I remember that. Elvira Madigan was, I think, a Swedish film from the in the 60s, perhaps. And, so it's time for romance and some very familiar, probably, classical music pieces that have been tied to romantic movies and romantic moments somewhere along the way. Okay. What else? Anything else there? I've got a couple of comments I can toss in here at the end.
Right. Well, just in addition to what you're saying, Jay, the Berlioz Beatrice and Benedict Overture, which was inspired by Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center tonight in the great Guido Auditorium. And it's a very classy event and great classical music, which you can't really hear too much of anywhere else other than the Detroit Symphony. And so go and support them. I think this is their last Dearborn Symphony performance as such before the holidays. And there's always different holiday music presentations in December before Christmas, before the holidays, whether the choral groups or Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker often is there. And I don't know what the schedule is for the center, but there's always a number of those things. So I think this may be the last performance by the Dearborn Symphony until the spring, maybe January or February, but
okay.
Yep. Yeah, so catch it tonight. Very romantic, good for a date. Okay. Coming up at 2 o'clock is Highway 61. Joanne Korczynska returns after a little time off last week for good behavior, and we will get started with that when she gets in. A little cold out there today, so I think our car will start, though. Anyway, here's Jack Lessenberry. Of course, he did make some of his comments in his recorded statement from Michigan Radio that was came from yesterday about the election, but in the Metro Times, he had a comment, and I think this comes from last week, about the election results. And, of course, all right. The headline is Our Broken System, but here's some highlights. It says, if you needed proof that our politics, our traditional media, and our political system are screwed up beyond belief, the Detroit Free Press proved it 9 days before the election. And they said, quote, when it comes to education, Governor Rick Snyder just doesn't seem to get it, unquote, the newspaper's editorial writers wrote. And they were even harsher on his environmental record, calling it, quote, a misguided attempt to placate free market forces at any cost, unquote. When it came to values, Lessenberry continues, the newspaper was harshest of all, saying Snyder was turning the state into Mississippi. Mm-hmm. Mississippi. Okay, and what does that mean? Okay, well, the quote is, Michigan during Snyder's tenure has become a less trial-learned state with more restrictions on reproductive rights and fewer labor protections. Where Snyder's self-fashioned profiles become a joke, the state needs a more progressive vision. That was quotes from the Detroit Free Press. And then, of course, having said all that, as you know, the newspapers told its readers to re-elect Snyder. And Lessenberry concludes, you can't get much more cynical than that. Why did they do it, he asks. Well, basically, they said it was pragmatism, quote-unquote. Snyder had sometimes shown, quote, strong, decisive leadership, unquote. And, of course, Lessenberry says, after all, he made the trains run on time. Oops, sorry, no. Lessenberry says, no, that was Mussolini back in the 1930s. You know, the dictator, yeah, Mussolini. Yeah, he was a terrible dictator, brutal, violent, no civil rights, human rights, don't worry about that. But the trains are running on time. Is that the kind of life you want, folks? I'm adding that. Remember, all opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College. And by the way, our trains still don't run on time in Michigan. But in an editorial, continues Lessenberry, that looked molded by the heavy hands in the corporate state, Detroit's allegedly progressive newspaper backed the man who helped ram through some of the worst legislation in decades. Did anybody forget Right to Work, which Snyder said wasn't on his agenda? Slashing higher ed to give businesses a huge tax break that hasn't created jobs? Yes, he did cut money to schools that gets into the classroom. So he can't deny that, but he says, well, but overall, I helped the pension funds. We were supposed to. You just put money into the pension funds that legally the state was supposed to do anyway, but wasn't doing. Sort of like Detroit was supposed to put money into pension funds for years for the police and fire department people when they retired, and they weren't. Okay. So, come on here. There's got to be some responsibility. And, of course, Snyder giving a tax to people on pensions, public pensions, like teachers. I didn't think that was great fun because it happened to me. So, anyway, in general, he concludes the hypocrisy or utter cynicism is breathtaking of that event. And he says, of course, Snyder did do a few good things. The new bridge, for one, and Kevin Orr was probably the best choice of anyone who could have made it to get Detroit through the bankruptcy. And, of course, trying to get the bridge there. So that's a big deal. Okay. Lessenberry is against our state's term limits, our so-called asinine term limits. As Craig Folly said, we already had term limits before that was put in place. They're called elections. You don't like someone, vote them out. You say, well, that never happened. None of people votes. Nobody cares. Is term limits why nobody votes in Michigan? Say, well, at least a third of them will be gone next time anyway. I don't have to vote. They can't be too corrupt with only 6 years in office. Oh, yes, they can. Let me tell you. And